Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to MedPlus Health Services Limited Q3 FY22 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Gangadi Madhukar Reddy from MedPlus. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Neera. Good afternoon. On behalf of MedPlus Health Services Limited, I extend a very warm welcome to everyone who's joined us on our call today. I am Madhukar Gangadi, and I'm the CEO of MedPlus. I'll now request our CFO to make the necessary disclosure statement.
Thank you, sir. Please note that anything which we say that refers to our outlook for the future is a forward-looking statement, which must be read in conjunction with the risks that the company faces. The complete statement is included in our investor presentation dated 15/12/2022, which is available in our website and BSE and NSE websites as well.
Thank you, Ahmed. I would like to begin by thanking all of my  16,000+ colleagues for their efforts and diligence that go into providing an essential service to our customers. As you know, MedPlus was listed on the Indian stock exchanges on 23rd December 2021, and this is our inaugural analyst presentation. Before we move to the quarterly update, I wanted to cover a few overview points for those who are new to the MedPlus story. MedPlus operates in a very attractive space, the pharmacy space. It is one of the fastest-growing retail segments out there, faster than, I would say, even the food and grocery and all, which typically have been at the forefront of the whole retail revolution in India. There's a large headroom to grow. You know, the business is expected to go up to 200,000 crore by 2025 for a variety of reasons, and these are going to be largely, you know, affordability, access, and various lifestyle reasons for which, you know, diseases continue to actually be on the rise. On top of that, the other main reason, you know, for making this space a very attractive one would be the unit economics of the space itself. Not only is the ROCE one of the highest out here, actually the highest, the revenue and the cost, the revenue of per square foot is among the highest. You know, pharmacy basically stands anywhere between 30,000-50,000 per square foot, and the cost of setting up the business itself is not very high. You know, we typically set up a store, the CapEx for our stores is around 7 lakhs, and a lot of the people actually end up doing it at even lower cost, some of the mom-and-pop stores. All in all, this remains a very attractive space for new entrants. The good thing about this is not only is it growing fast, the penetration by organized retail is among the lowest in the overall retail industry. Today, less than 10% of the overall industry is in the hands of a couple of large organized retailers, and the rest are online players now. That said, the MedPlus story itself, you know, we started in 2006 out of Hyderabad, and over 16 years have built a trusted brand across seven states and 280 cities. Since inception, we have cut more than 750 million bills across our 2,400+ stores. Today, we have over 16,000 employees, and across all the pharma and non-pharma, we have 43,000+ active SKUs, which we serve from over 10 regional warehouses. What this has done for us, this cluster-based network, has actually enabled us to do very well in the omni-channel side. You know, by omni-channel, I mean, you know, not only are we good at, you know, physical retail side, we have also been online, we have also been enabled by software since the day we started. We have one of the most profitable omni-channel services out there. You know, for us, this network, since we actually serve online only in the cities in which we are present, what this does for us is, you know, reduces the overall customer acquisition cost. We actually spend almost nothing on, you know, marketing out here. Second, given that we are present both in the physical and the online side, we are able to take care of both the acute and chronic customers. acute guys who need medicine out there now, typically don't will not wait for our order to get processed and the product delivered. So we are in a place where we can actually get this delivered immediately. And given the fact that we are present everywhere, in some cities, you know, we are in the three main cities in which we are there, we have over 300 stores, and in the fourth city of Calcutta, we have over 250 stores. We are able to supply almost, you know, 90-95% of our orders under less than 2 hours. Actually, 70% of our orders are supplied under an hour. And not only does this, you know, allow us to actually reach our customers fast, it also reduces the overall cost of, you know, delivery to us. So what this means is, all in all, omni-channel service, which is, you know, goes on the back of a dense network, allows us to actually run one of the few profitable omni-channel services in the country. The scale not only allows us to do this, it also allows us to present a very large private label market. You know, today we have over 800 SKUs. You know, what started off as a small, you know, part of our business several years back, today is, you know, spread across 800 SKUs and several different, you know, categories out there. We have pharma, almost all, both chronic and non-chronic medication out there. We have a complete set of, you know, health-related and other foods. We also have skincare, haircare, and everything else along with consultation products and all. And we also have a very significant amount of sales coming in from products which are like baby needs, home health monitoring devices, and rehabilitation kind of kits out there. So what we have achieved over the last 15 years is, you know, set up a fantastic platform which is allows us to actually grow rapidly, and that is what we are seeing in the last few years right now. So today, the key pillars for growth for us would be growing existing clusters and go deeper into this whole area completely, leverage our leadership in the omni-channel platform while increasing to our delivery to all the three or to more and more locations. You know, to that point, I'll, you know, come back to you with the number of pin codes which you're actually serving and everything else. And finally, continue to expand the share of private label. You know, here I would like to just point out a couple of things. You know, India is one of the few places where the overall pharma retail has actually been extremely fragmented. So this is one of the few places where you actually see literally 50,000, you know, distributors, more than 500,000, you know, retailers and all. And for that reason, the retailer and distributor has had almost no leverage at all. And that's the reason why brands actually play such an important role. And for that reason, we actually have a situation where there are hundreds and hundreds of different companies producing the same product and are selling them as branded generics to the pharmacy. Unlike a, you know, place like in US or UK or wherever, you know, where you've got a Walgreens and CVS and a couple of other large chains, where they sell only a couple of different things. You know, they sell either a product which is completely based on patent, or it is a CVS or a Walgreens or something else, a branded generic. So as the brand continues to grow, we expect our share of private label will continue to grow as more and more people accept our product. We will continue to actually, you know, increase this overall private label. And those are the three things on which the company will continue to grow forward. For us, we're well equipped with all the things which are needed to actually make this happen. You know, our operating cash flow is at around 27.5 crores in Q3. There's a lot of headroom for leverage since we almost have zero debt. And today we have cash and cash equivalents to the tune of 695 crores. So this was something which was lacking in the past for us. This is something which we have. We have the platform and we expect to continue to grow going forward. Now on to the highlights for Q3. So for us, now on the latest quarter's performance, our revenue was 933 crores. And this led to a gross margin of 193.8 crores and an operating EBITDA of 36.6 crores. So for us, we continue with our store expansion program. We have opened over 537 stores in the last 12 months, and out of which 183 stores got opened in the last quarter itself. This is the largest quarterly store openings in our history, and we'll maintain this pace. The highest additions were in Maharashtra and Tamil Nadu, 43 and 36 respectively. Also, 50% of store openings this quarter have been in Tier 2 and beyond. Our ability to grow and operate in these markets is proof of our ability to scale and an important element of our cluster-based growth strategy. We have 906 of our 2,477 stores in Tier 2 and beyond. This year, this quarter, there were 32 store closures, but most of them, mostly on account of franchises, which have been drawn by us. And if you actually look at it, something like the 19 franchisees, the 19 of the stores were relocation stores where, typically we have a store lead which runs for 9 years, at the end of which we typically are able to renegotiate and stay in the same place. But in some cases where we are not able to do it, or where we find that the market has moved, we'll typically end up moving. And that has accounted for nearly 19 of the 32 stores which have been relocated. Please note that these stores, the average age of these stores were 9.4 years. I mean, it's not something which we opened yesterday and that we made a mistake and then we moved on. These are places where there was a genuine need for us to move. 9 of them were franchise stores just shut down, and 4 of the stores were moved for various other reasons, including for reasons like some local disturbance or it could have been selection mistake or something like that. But it's a small portion of our overall stores. So our store network now is overall it's a pretty young store network. 25% are less than 12 months, if you look at it. And 36% of the overall stores are less than 2 years. So typically our stores end up doing, reaching a plateau at the 36 month and beyond which they start contributing 10% and more EBITDA, which is more at the company level. So for us, given the fact that 36% are still not in this stage, we have, a lot of time for us. For the stores to actually start growing out there. The pharmacy count, the network store size, we have, closed with 2,477 stores with 1.45 million square foot. Last quarter, this was 1940. Last year, Q3, this was 1,940 stores with 1.1 million square foot. An addition of around 537 stores overall. The average store size is now 588 square foot. To give you a sense of spread in store sizes, we have 1,615 stores less than 600 and 862 that are greater than 600 square foot. Now, on our same store performance, we measure this as stores that have been in operation for 12 months and more as in the last day of the reporting quarter. Revenue from these stores have grown by 4.2% year-on-year. We continue to maintain a store-level EBITDA margin in the range of 10%. The store-level operating ROC of these stores is 69% for us. Revenue mix. As I mentioned earlier, with scale, we are better poised to increase share of revenue from private label. In Q3, 12% of our revenue came from private label, and this compares favorably with 9.1% in Q2 and 10% in Q3 of last year. The trajectory of increasing share of our private label in our customers' basket continues. Our increasing presence in Tier 2 and beyond is reflecting in our revenue mix. Typically, we expect more sales of private label to come from the Tier 2, Tier 3, and that is getting reflected here. This quarter, 29% of our pharmacy revenues came from stores in those tiers, and this is up from 46% in Q3 of last year. On the omnichannel side, we continue to extend our coverage of PIN codes from where we take orders online. Given that we supply only from where our physical presence is there, this is a slightly slower addition of PIN codes, but every PIN code we add is a profitable addition to us. Almost every order which we do, we make money on that. So the orders are acquired because there is a store which basically is attracting customers out there, some of whom basically then decide to actually go online and start, you know, interacting with us through the online channel, and some of whom basically continue to do both online and offline over a period of time. Now, what this does is, they are all coming from a small area. We are able to deliver it in the shortest possible time, in less than 2 hours, and we're also able to do it profitably. But that said, you know, slowly but steadily, we continue to increase the overall, you know, pin codes in our area of service we're offering. Overall, our online strategy is driven by our conviction that omnichannel is the most suitable and profitable approach in the pharmacy space. We find greater stickiness in those customers who interact with us omnichannel than those that interact with us purely via the online route. That concludes my update. Now, let me request Hemant, our CFO, to give you the financial update.
Thank you, sir. Our quarterly performance, we clocked Q3 revenue of 933 crores versus 800 crores last year, which is a healthy growth of 17% growth year-on-year, mainly driven with an increase of, aggressive increase of new stores. On a gross level, we have added 622 odd stores at a gross level. So that has helped increase of our majorly 17% growth. Secondly, on the gross margin, we have registered 20.8% gross margin versus 20.1% last year, mainly driven with the private label increase of 10% to 12%. Operating EBITDA of 3.9% this quarter versus 5.1% last year. Again, the decrease is majorly contributed as aggressive growth of stores, which means that the cost associated with those number of stores like salaries and rent have brought down that the overall EBITDA margin, majorly driven by rental cost and salaries by closer to 100 basis points on sales. PAT of 17 crores versus 23 crores of last year. That's on the P&L. Coming to the balance sheet, on the inventory, the total inventory on December is 848 crores in absolute terms, with an increase, net increase of 124 crores in the last 1 year. We are at net cash positive of 600 odd crores. In terms of the capex, for Q3 we spent around 28 odd crores, out of which 13 crores only for the new stores and 4 to 5 crores for the work in progress, which are in line for the new stores. Coming to the working capital days, so earlier I have touched upon the inventory in absolute terms. Now on the days, the net working capital days are 62 days, which has increased from 60 days last year. This networking comprises of inventory days and payable days. Inventory is again, we would like to present in a two further breakup with store level inventory and warehouse inventory. The store level inventory days has increased from 39 to 45 days, majorly due to the number of stores that have been opened in the last 1 year. In the last 1 year, stores have inventory of 85 days versus 1 year old stores which are 38 days. And warehouse inventory has decreased from 45 to 39 days. Coming to the payable days, we are at 23 days, which is, we were at 24 days last year and now it's 23 days. Coming to the cash flow from operations, so we have a healthy cash flow from operations this quarter, which is at 27 crores, which was touched upon earlier, from an EBITDA of 36 odd crores, with a conversion ratio of 75%, so which means that 75% of our EBITDA is converted into cash from operations. Finally, ROCE. While we are at 16% at corporate level ROCE as of December end, but if you look at the stores which are 1 year or more, we are at 69% ROCE.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The first question is from the owner Prakash Agarwal from Axis Capital Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Am I audible?
Yeah.
Yeah, good evening to all. My first question is on the store level growth that you are showing. So this is the same store growth, SSG 4.2%, and Is it in line with your expectations?
I would say it's slightly muted. A couple of reasons out there. You know, if you look at it, I would say it is more or less on the, in the line which the target would be. If you look at it, in the last year, we have added 537 stores. That's almost 20%, 25% we have added to the existing store base out there. And 200 of these stores have come in just 4 cities. All these cities require these stores. And we have seen the business need for that, and hence we have gone and set these stores up. But there is going to be some level of split sales no matter what we do and how far we actually set up the store from each one. What we have done is we have set up the stores in markets and in micro markets, which where we have seen, you know, new aggregation and new densities coming up. One. And wherever the stores are, and even if the store is, let's say, a kilometer and a half away from the existing store, that will tend to take away a small portion of customers from the existing store. You know, given the fact that we have 20% discount and 60% of the customers who come to us come for their needs for chronic medications and all, these people typically tend to come from, you know, most of them come from a small area around the store, but some of them also come from slightly farther area. And so when we set up a store like this, we are bound to see some of the stores sales spilling onto those new stores. And so that's been the reason why, you know, same store sales growth have not actually taken off to the level one would expect in a normal year. In a normal year, we know we have been doing 150 stores per year. But yeah, I just want to, you know, explain this point a little bit further. So when we do this, when we actually add these stores, we basically see the overall sales moving. So that is something which we can live with. You know, we are in the markets in which we are. We expect to actually gain bigger and bigger market share, and that's what basically gives us the power in the overall market and more influence in the overall pharma market. One. But more importantly, we are driven by only two things. When we set up a new store, is it actually getting, you know, to break even in the normal expected size? Is it basically getting to break even, you know, and that answer is always, has been true for us over the last 1 year too. The 60% of all our stores now break even within 3 months. That continues to be the same. And the trajectory for them to actually get to the normal sales level continues to be more or less same. That's one. And two, we also then make sure that when we're doing this, are our existing stores continuing to be profitable? Absolutely. As long as both these criteria are met, SSG or no SSG, we will continue to put in more stores to gain more market share.
Okay, fairly elaborate answer. Thank you for that. And just clarification, you mentioned, you know, 150 net store addition, which is there in the presentation. What I want to reconfirm, you said we want to sustain this momentum or... So, I mean, 600 for this year, and what could be the outlook for next year?
I just want to tell you that every quarter and quarter, except for the one quarter, we have actually been increasing the number of stores, the number of new stores which you have put in. We will continue this acceleration. So, which definitely means that it's going to be a much larger number than 600.
Okay, fair enough. And my second question is on, this quarter we saw some trend reversal. So top line growth of 16.5% and our other expenses is up 31%. So this is partly due to the additional store expansion, A, and are there any other reasons to it which you would like to call out?
Sure, this
do we see this, sir, just one more if I may add, do we see this trend for the near term given your, expansionary store addition plans?
So this quarter has...
I'm sorry, I interrupt you.
Yeah.
So the voice is not coming clear. Is it okay if I disconnect and reconnect you?
Sure.
Participants, please stay connected while we rejoin the management back to the call. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. We have the line for the management reconnected. So you may go ahead.
Right. So... unfortunately, Prakash, you know, the last 6-7 quarters have always, you know, come with some kind of a commentary. It's been COVID this quarter, no COVID this quarter, COVID this quarter kind of stuff. Even the last quarter was, you know, the Q2 also had some element of that.
In Q2, we had something like 30 crores of sales coming in from vaccines. And that's the reason why, you know, that went up a little bit. Otherwise, it would have been slightly lower and the growth would have been, you know, more in line with what would one expect quarter to quarter.
So, question was on Q3 that we see a 16% growth versus an expense line of 31% growth. So, one is the 16% growth versus your presentation slide 2 where you are saying that organized pharmacy retail growth is about 25%. So, commentary one there, and the other thing is on expenses, which is higher than the sales growth, and do we expect this in the near to medium term?
Right. So, the organized sales of 25% will probably be compounded over several quarters. I don't think we can just put it only to one. That's one. And that is to also, that will also be more, I would say you would have to actually spread it over a much larger area. There's several parts of the country in which organized retail is not there at all. So, while new investments go in out there and all, I'm pretty sure some of these areas will see a much larger growth, and so you may see that 25% out there. For us, the expenses have gone up mainly because of the new addition of stores. We have added nearly, you know, we've grown by 25% overall the number of stores, and that's basically been the cause for increase in overall cost for us. And if you look at it, something like 537 stores over the last 1 year is what has basically increased the overall cost. And these are all stores less than a year. And when they're less than a year, they are, you know, when we looked at it, the overall costs at the store level are at around 19%. Versus stores which are more than a year are at an overall cost of around 9 to 10% overall. The EBITDA for stores which are over 1 year is around 9.7-9.8% overall. So what this means is, while 19% is breaking even, given that our gross margin is around 20.7 or 20.9, it is breaking even. These stores are contributing extremely less, and they are also showing the overall cost to be on the slightly higher side.
Okay, and near to medium term outlook, sir, on this trend of higher cost versus revenue?
For us, we continue to expand the overall private label share, and that will continue to increase the overall gross margin for us. While there may, and I'm pretty sure the 1 year old stores will now start to contribute more as we go forward. So while the near to mid term thing could be flattish, we know that we are investing for the long term, and all these stores will actually become super profitable as we go forward.
Perfect, great. Thank you and all the best. I'll be in the queue.
Thanks, Prakash.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, sir. Good evening. Some questions. One is taking from Prakash's question. So, if from the same store sales growth, if you minus the 1 year, because 4% is including the stores which are just above 1 year, if you talk about more mature stores, let's say 5 years, 7 years, what would be number there? If it's 4% for everything, what would be numbers for mature stores?
So we'll have to come back to you on that, Anubhav. You know, for us, again, you know, we are less fussed as a company about the same store sales growth as we are about you know, gaining and keeping our market share and increasing our market share, actually, one. Two, we're also more about making sure that every store contributes. See, in a business in which convenience is more important than anything else, a physical retail, which is close by, would be visited by people, you know, more, I would say. Now, as the city grows and cities become more and more dense and more pockets of, you know, commerce come up, it is important for us to actually have stores that, you know, take the business out there, and we continue to maintain the market share. So for us, as I said again, unlike most retail, we worry more about a store's profitability once it the profitability of the store, existing store one, and the break even and coming to profitability of any new store we set up. So while we can come back to you with those numbers, those are not numbers which we look at, I would say.
My suggestion will be that just taking cue from your point only, that if not for individual store basis, even on a mature basis, even if you want to give out a cluster-wise number, that should be good as well. Because otherwise, see, if you look at your numbers which are reported for past quarter also, in 3Q last year, we have 5% growth rate SSG. 4Q was a decline of 7%. 1Q was the only exception which had a lot of COVID sales. Otherwise, 2Q was 3%, now it's 4%. So it's not this number is not making sense, because the drug price increase itself is on an average this much. So that's the reason we're asking for a more clearer number. This metric is not helping us to gauge the performance of the business. So you can come up with a cluster number as well, which will even take care of the point that you're saying, that some of the stores which are opening in the same region and they are drawing away sales from some of the older stores, which is fine. You can define them as a cluster if that's possible. That will help.
No, no, I'm happy to actually, you know, start talking about the city-wise sales and everything else. But I think a more relevant number, Anubhav, would be this. Are our one-year-old stores contributing 10% EBITDA at the store level or not? And are our new stores basically getting to profitability very quickly or not? Those are the two things which we talk about. And yes, you talked about the overall growth, you know, the inflation itself basically contributes to an increase in sales. That's right. But over the last 8 quarters, we've seen a lot of ups and downs. You know, Q1 of this year was extremely good because of COVID. And because of fears of, you know, bumps over the next 2 quarters, a lot of people ended up actually buying ahead of time. So as much as it was related to, let us say, specific items being sold for COVID, it is also equally true for people who just bought ahead of time. So the next quarter would automatically look back. And then again, right. So, and this has been happening in the last 8 quarters, every 3rd quarter. So there's a scare of bun, there's a scare of actually people shutting down, there's a scare of supply chains being broken down for which medicines may or may not be available. So chronic, people who buy chronic, you know, medication for us, for chronic therapies and all, they ended up buying more. So we have seen a lot of spikes, and these are not natural, and these all have to be explained. So nothing in the last 2 years has been, you know, usual, business as usual, I would say. And in addition to that, a couple of other reasons have also contributed to, I would say, slightly muted sales growth across all the places. We are a company which is very strong in the 4-5 metros out there. Most of our stores are there in Hyderabad, Bangalore, Chennai and Calcutta. Almost all these places have a significant, you know, population which has been asked to actually go home and work from home. So that is something which we have also seen. Those cities are yet to return to normal, one. And two, as I said, a never before addition of stores in our own company has actually led to a muted growth. What we take heart from is only one thing. Everything is, you know, going on schedule as far as breaking even is concerned. And everything is basically delivering the way we actually want it to at the store level.
Sure, absolutely, sir. And just 2-3 more questions. One is on the inventory. Just a clarity, did you say that, so now in the newer stores, is there a new trend that you're keeping less inventory at the warehouse and more at the store level?
No, not really. This is again a COVID-related situation, where, you know, we have had a situation in which we have seen that things have started going out of stock for a lot of the products. And so we are stocking a little bit more for some of the products only. That's one. And second, we are also, you know, getting geared up to open the 70-80 odd stores which are opening every month. So the warehouse itself is actually taking on a little bit more inventory to stock the stores out there. So both these things happen. Are happening out there. Otherwise, no, I think it will all come. So while it has come down from 45 days to 39 days, I think it will continue to come down going forward for us. So this is not something which we plan on doing going forward.
So when do you expect this 84 days inventory to, let's say, come down to 70, 75 days? When do you expect that? In let's say, 6 months time or a more than a year timeline?
I think we will start seeing the decrease in inventory as we go forward, Anubhav, right now. Why don't I come back to you on the exact times and all, or what we expect the times will be for us on the inventory time?
Sure. Just a clarity to Hemant. Hemant, in this segment, segment-wise asset section, you have pathology testing services where the segment assets are up from 30 crore to 66 crore from in just a quarter. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. There is an increase of close to 27 crores. We are starting to increase our diagnostic stuff. So that is the assets that you are seeing there. So majorly we last 9 months, we have incurred almost 18 crores in that line, and hence you will see an increase on the pathology business. That's nothing but, I'm sure you'd have heard about diagnostic business that we are now focusing or will be focusing to expand in a bigger scale. For that, we have spent close to 18 odd crores.
You want to talk about where they spend money mostly spent? Is this mostly creating the lab infrastructure here or the collection centers? Because the number is large. It is not a small number.
Yes. So a couple of things. We have actually spent money on setting up a small processing center in each of Hyderabad, Bangalore, Chennai, and Nagpur and all. We'll continue to, and we have paid advances for setting it up in Calcutta and Pune and a couple of other places. So these places will process all the samples which are collected from that city and deliver the results. And given that we have got a large portion of people who, buy medication for thyroid disorders and diabetes and all, these are people who monitor their levels on a regular basis, and they form a natural set of people from whom we can draw the clients out there. So that's one. We are also starting a small, we are also piloting a radiology center out there in Hyderabad, and this is something on which we have also spent a little bit of money out there. This is going to be a MRI, CT scan and a couple of other things out there, but this is strictly in the pilot stage, so we are not really put it out there.
And for collecting samples, are you collecting those samples mostly at your pharmacy level, or are you putting up the collection centers there?
No, these are all, a portion of our pharmacies which have the facilities and which have the space end up actually doubling up as collection centers out there, so there is no additional cost to it. Typically, people who actually monitor these levels do it in the morning sessions, in the morning hours when they're on fasting level and all. So, and that's the time when the stores are not at their busiest, and we find it, easy for the store to double up as a collection center out there. So it's not additional cost, rental or otherwise a capex.
And normally, sir, this business runs on an asset turns of 3x, 4x. So do you think with the investment of about 60, 70 crore, this can be a 250, 300 crore business for you in 2-3 years or 3-4 years?
So there are two parts to the overall business right now. One is, we leveraging the network which we have, converting a portion of them to become collection centers, delivering, cost, delivering services delivering a lot of value out there to the customers out there through this. That's one. But the second part also is the overall piloting of the diagnostic center, radiology and all. So that's something which we will discuss as we go forward. That's going to be a slightly different model. So we will, once the pilot is done, we'll come back to you guys with, more details on that.
Okay. And just last question, and then I'll join back you back. If you continue to spend, expand 187 stores per quarter, let's say 700-800 stores annually, do you think the EBITDA margin of this quarter is representative? You have two trends. Private label will increase, and because the number of stores are also increasing, so would you say this close to 4% margin is what you expect over next 2 years, something like that?
So So the margin expansion is going to be there, that's for sure. And once that kicks in, you know, I think the costs which are there are directly in line with the number of stores which you have added and the percentage of stores which you have added. You know, as we go forward, even if I add, let's say, another 700 or 800 stores also every year or even slightly more, depends on the base of stores which I have. So it's going to be a function of both the amount of private label which we increase, the overall sales, and, you know, whatever benefits we get on the back end. Because as the number continues to grow, I'm pretty sure, you know, there will be efficiencies both in the warehouse as well as the corporate side. So all these will also kick in out here and above. I don't think it's going to be business as usual, or at least it's not going to follow the same trajectory. But if we were to really increase the speed and if we go even faster, then maybe they'll be flattish for a while.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil Masal from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, everyone. My question is on the... I'm audible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So my question is on the margin front. You're mentioning that the private label share should go up and that will kind of boost margins. But my question is that you talk about hyperlocal being a key differentiator in terms of managing fill rates and then keeping the delivery cost low as well. But doesn't a hyperlocal model come with a space restriction, given that your physical stores are only 400-500 square feet? So how will you be able to stock so many SKUs which will be required to increase the share of private label in the overall mix?
So I'm talking about private label for medicines, and these actually don't require too much space, honestly. Today we already have around 800 odd private labels, and I'm pretty sure the you know, we'll continue to increase these. But the more profitable addition private label medicines will not take up too much space, so that's not a concern. One, and we are, you know, we are not going closer and closer to the customer so that we can basically do slightly faster e-commerce delivery and all. This, you know, we are, the fact that the business demands that we put up those stores and those, you know, happen to be part of a really dense network allow us to actually do this. So, but it is not to reduce the delivery time or whatever. You know, we are setting up the stores of a size and of an inventory level that the market demands. Our 400 square foot or 500 square foot stores are more than, you know, capable of holding the inventory required to actually take care of customers in that area. And secondly, whenever an order hits our, you know, omnichannel platform, it hits the nearest store, and whatever is available in that store or in that hub from where it is getting fulfilled, the customer gets a message saying that out of the 10 or 8 or 9, whatever you ask for, I've got these. If a portion of them are not available, the customer gets a message saying that one or two other items are not available, and they will be fetched from the warehouse and delivered next day. So we don't expect to basically fill 100% of everything from the nearest point out there. But typically it is 90-95% of all the products required for a customer, or, you know, maybe slightly less. But mostly the items which are asked for usually by, you know, people on emergency needs are always there.
All right. So in terms of, you mentioned that private label is going to be more on the pharma side. So how is it going to work? I mean, if a customer comes to the store and orders on an omnichannel basis, would you be showing alternatives to the customer that these are lower price alternatives available, non-branded pharma availability is there, and then you leave it to the customer whether he wants to opt for the lower priced alternative or not, or how is it going to work? I mean, is there a demand already for the private label, or you are going to create it by trying to actively substitute, though there can be some issues around regulations, how that works. So how is it going to work, if you can help me understand this?
Sure, sure. So, Nikhil, we really don't do anything on the online side as far as private label is concerned. So, if a customer, you know, uploads a prescription and says he wants XYZ drugs, our system basically detects to see if we have the drugs or not. If we have it, great. If we don't have it, we'll tell him about the substitutes out there and all. But that's a long and cumbersome process. We really don't get into that because you also need to change the prescription itself. So, then that would mean an extra call, him basically saying that, okay, I need to now get a new prescription. You can either get it from our, you know, online consultant out there, or you can get it directly. But that's not how it works. Typically, you know, when a walk-in customer comes into a store with 10 or 12 or whatever items out there on his prescription list, our goal would be to, you know, give him as much, if not 100%, at least, you know, as close to 100% as possible. But no matter what we do, given that there are a few million odd brands out there in the country, and these are all getting pushed randomly across all the physicians out there, there's always a new prescription coming in with a new drug out there every single day. And so those, you know, I would say slower moving or newly added, let's say, drugs to the overall prescription list of a local doctor, those would go into the list where we basically say, you know, this is something which we don't have right now as of now. We could either fetch it for you from the warehouse, or we have a substitute. And typically, we would in the past have substituted it with another brand. We'd have said, okay, what you've asked for is from Cipla. I don't have it. I'll give it to you. I'll give you something else from Lupin. Today, it is basically, okay, I don't have this. I can either fetch it for you from the warehouse, or I have an alternative from my own company or from a different company. And that's how we do it. It's not on the online side, Nikhil. It's too cumbersome. It doesn't really make for a great customer experience.
All right. Okay. And one final question. Can you give some guidance on where the online sales share will settle in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years time frame? I mean, from current 7-8% levels, what percentage levels are you targeting for the online contribution?
So, honestly speaking, you know, I would think that something like 10 to 15% would be the number. It would be a little difficult for me to have a guess out there at this point, and I'll tell you why. You know, in a normal situation, we see that level of customers calling on phone and asking for the product, or asking for an alternative channel, mainly, you know, either phone or sending someone else or doing online and all that sort of stuff. You know, different from walking up to the store and buying the medicine, right? So all the people who are basically now doing it on phone and who are also online and as more and more people get online and all, they'll probably use this more often and all that sort of stuff. But this is in the absence of someone else basically, no one else doing anything silly. You know, if people decide to basically sell stuff at a loss for a long, long time, so I would think that some of the patients at least would basically go out there for the higher cost, and we are seeing a little bit of that. We're not seeing a major dent out there because we continue to take business from the other mom and pop stores and all. So our goal would be to only match or beat the discount of mom and pop stores and make sure that we are the number one out there on the physical side. Where on a regular everyday low prices side also we meet that. But, they, you know, you will always see competition basically coming in and doing some promotional thing out there. They all think that it is promotional. But everyone's one quarter of promotion becomes a full year of promotion for the customer, where three or four different people are saying, okay, I'll give you 25% or whatever for this quarter, and then someone else comes and does something else. So that's going to be a little bit of a, you know, up and down. So I'm not really able to tell you, but I would say in a normal situation, you know, anything from 10 to 15, which is a normal population, which would otherwise, you know, call on phone or go online, would go online with us.
All right. And then just, if I may just squeeze in one final one. With scale growing, would you be in a better position to get some bonus units or some discounting from the distribution channel? Or irrespective of scale, your cost of procurement would remain the same?
It's a... of all the things, right, that leverage is the one which I think will be the least, while we continue to get slightly better sourcing margins out there. I think it'll probably be, you know, the hardest to actually extract any extra. And the reason for that is very simple. You know, we are not the guys who basically are sitting out there and writing the prescription. We are not really influencing the actual sale of the medicine, we are only fulfilling it, and for that reason, I would think that any pharma company, you know, would hesitate to give out any additional thing. You know, the whatever gains we had were easy to get earlier in the past, mainly because of one thing. You know, they were already giving a margin to distributors. We acquired the distributors, so we got the full margin of that. Now, additional margins purely based on scale, yes, maybe 0.5%, 1%, but it's not going to be a substantial jump. And that would remain true for everyone, irrespective of the scale, I would say.
All right. Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Anuj Suneja from ICICI Prudential Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Thank you, team. So, sir, my broader question is on the lines of the employee cost that has gone up. So, what would be an apt level that it should balance upon, and how do you see the ESOP expenses going forward?
So, till now, I don't think we have had any ESOP expenses which have actually hit the existing shareholders. Whatever has happened before the issue. So we see a quarterly non-cash expenditure of around 6.5 crores, and this is based on the allotment we made just before the IPO. This is granted in November 2021. We don't expect it to be significant, but we will revisit this at the end of the year when we have to figure out ways of incentivizing our then employees. On the cost of employees itself, it remains more or less steady at the 4 to 5% for all stores which are older than 2 years, I would say 1 and 2 years. The new stores, of course, as I said, the overall expenditure in the store is 19% overall, in which the cost of employees is probably around 10 to 11%. It's double of what it should be. And typically we expect our cost in the store to be around 9 to 10. It is 19, so it's probably double. So probably sitting at around 10% as of now for the stores which are less than a year old.
Okay, sir. So can I treat this ESOP as a one-off this time, and it should not be a recurring item in your financial statements?
No, as I said, it is non-cash. It doesn't affect anything out there, but it is going to be a recurring item. The cost is going to be taken every quarter.
Okay, so when I have to calculate the operating EBITDA, I'll need to add it probably back.
So it is vested over 4 years. And it has been granted in November 2021. So this is going to basically be there. But, the only good thing about it is not cash going out of the company at this point.
Got it. My third question is on the lines of the diagnostic centers that you are planning. So what would be the size of the diagnostics as a percentage of your revenue? And if you're focusing Hyderabad as a radiology market, what is the market size of Hyderabad as a radiology market? Because there is another player who already is getting about 85% of its share from the Hyderabad market.
I would very much doubt if anyone is getting 85% of anything out there.
85% of it's about
80% of his revenue comes from Hyderabad. I know that, but it's not 85% of the overall market. So there's enough and more market out there. Can I kick this out to the next quarter and all? This is a pilot thing. We want to actually keep all speculation about it right now under control. So why don't I come back to you when I have some more details on this?
Perfect. My last questions would be on the lines of, so what would be the typical SSSG that which you see as a going concern? And secondly, what would be the EBITDA margin of a mature store? What would be your guidance on that?
See, EBITDA margin of a mature store at the store level is always going to be around 10% and more, right? 10% is the usual margin. For us, see, what we do is constantly look at our stores to see which ones are delivering 12, 13 and 14, which ones are we getting more than average sales, and then look to see from which catchments are the customers coming to that store for. So if there is a significant number of people coming from a catchment which is slightly longer or slightly farther, then it is in our interest to actually go set up one more store before competition sets up some other store. We are not the only players out there. We have got one other major competitor and a couple of other local guys. This is a convenience business. And while we are the number one listing for most people for the discounts and everything else, we don't want to just rely only on that. It's always been about quality, convenience, and low value for us. So we don't want to just rely on one of the pillars out there, value, and say customers have to come to us from far. So constant analysis of the places from where customers are coming in, helps us to figure out where the next store is coming in. And that one will 100% take a little bit of the sales no matter what we do. So we're not, as I said, as hung up. But to answer one question, the way we see it, for us to maintain a constant EBITDA of whatever is the number is out there, we need to just grow by around 4-4.5% every year for us to actually be there at that number. Given that our, you know, typical employee costs go up by around 10% every year and our rents go up by around 5% every year and our overall margin is 20%. On a base of, you know, and the sales we're talking about is on a base of around 1.6 to 1.7 crores a year.
Perfect. That'll be all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Ritesh Rathod from Nippon India Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Can you explain when I see your store closure data, the relocation being a larger chunk and particularly the matured stores with the average age of 8-9 years. So how, what kind of hit it has on your same store growth? Do you open both the stores parallel, like when the one store is closing, the other stores is open parallelly, how it impacts the profitability? If you can share that experience, would be great. And is the number similar on a last 12-month basis also?
No, not really. I think this quarter we have seen slightly more, you know, relocations and closures than usual, 32 overall. Out of 32, as I said, 19 have been closed because we have relocated the store. And the average age of these 19 stores was 9.4 years overall. So what this means is, you know, as I said, our typical lease is a 9-year lease. At the end of 9 years, we either, you know, stay back after renegotiating the rent and lease with the customer, or with the landlord, or we move. Now, we could move, you know, if we think that the business has moved, or if there's a more, you know, let us say, more attractive location which has come up in the area and we decide to move out there and all. So it could be for both those reasons. But for whatever, no, this does not have any effect out there on this. And typically though, while we open a new store in that neighboring area, we usually keep this dark for at least a couple of months to make sure that some other medical store doesn't go, you know, our competitor doesn't go and set up a store out there and then basically start taking that business. So that's something we should do anyway. For us, the closures have been mainly because we have shifted because of lease reasons or because the market has moved, not because it was a mistake which we made in selection in the beginning itself.
Yeah, so yeah, I got that thing from your presentation also. And usually after 9 years, the landlord would ask for an abnormal rate hike or rental hike. So when you see that thing, what impact it would have on your SSG or any way you measure this thing? Because it out of 50% of your closure is because of this relocation. And if I assume your closure rate of whatever 3% or 2-5% on last 12-month basis, a decent chunk is because stores are getting matured and you will open a store, new store in that region and the new store cost would be there and if you won't shut the old store immediately. So, is there any way you would like to measure this thing?
Yeah, so for us, you know, once we actually shut down a store, if there's a cost, it's only the rent, and rent is a very small portion of our overall expense. Typically, our overall network has an expense of around 2.75% on rent. The older stores would actually have around 1.5 to 2%. Right? So it's not a big expense for us. Once the manpower is moved, most of the cost is actually gone from that place. One. And two, when we move to a new store, see, we have already depreciated the overall asset here in the first 5 years itself, most of it anyway. And for us, if you look at it, it costs us 6 to 7 lakh rupees to set up a new store, the capex of the store. So it's not a major expense for us. And a lot of the stuff which we actually, you know, take out from an existing store is moved. Most of the cost is towards the fridge, ACs, and the computers, printers, and the furniture. Almost all of it is reusable. So there's no big cost when we relocate. We estimate the total cost of relocation to be around 2 lakhs, and that is mainly towards, you know, some fixed things like something which can't be moved, like painting and everything else, and the cost of, you know, getting a license for that location.
Okay, and maybe second one on your omni channel, your 2-hour hyper local delivery, is it present across stores which you have 2400, or is it still to be experimented, and how is the fill rate in the areas where you serve?
So we're there in Hyderabad, Bangalore, Chennai, Pune, Calcutta and all. Any place where we have a reasonable location, we actually do it. In a city like Hyderabad, to give you an example, around 37 odd hubs are there from where we deliver. So we don't deliver from all the 300 odd stores. And as you can see from the 14th slide on our listing out there, we have grown these delivery hubs from 174 to 377. So we are looking to actually get closer and closer to the customer, but not every store. You know, maybe a tenth of the stores in a city will be delivery hubs.
Over here, what would be customer acquisition cost and number of registered users? Any data you provide on the omnichannel or the online?
We don't spend any money on customer acquisition. We stopped advertising for online. The way it works for us is, you know, people walk into a store, they buy. They sometimes decide, and every store we basically tell them you can either buy online or offline. We give them the access out there and all. And every store has got a prominent thing which says MetlaSmart.com is also available online and everything else. So that's how we acquire our customers. We did spend a little bit of money in maybe June, July, but I don't think anything much has been spent in the last quarter at all on online acquisition.
But we don't have, we have this data of registered users or active users or membership users. Any way you track it?
We track all of those. Happy to send that across to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Rano Patanjali Srinivasan from Mirabilis Investment Trust. Please go ahead.
Sir, the first thing I'd like to know is that your gross margins have kind of gone up compared to the last year, but I'm not able to understand correctly whether it's because of your increase in private label or is it because the branded pharma has also picked up comparatively.
Branded pharma picking up does not really increase the margin by much, because their, you know, incoming margins have been more or less same, and we are actually seeing that more and more people are now buying above 1000 and actually getting slightly higher discount, right? So I don't think it is because of that. On the other hand, private label has gone up, especially for medicines out there, and it has actually gone up from 10% to 12% overall private label, with the medicines alone going up from something like 5.5 or something like that to 7% or more.
Okay, sir. So previously you were saying of 10%, 5.5% was only medicines, and now it's gone up to 7.5%.
That's right.
Okay, sir. Sir, and one more thing, you had previously mentioned like there was not much benefit we got because of COVID, because some segments like operations related medicines and all of that we were not selling because all the surgeries and all had come to a standstill. Has that part of the business picked up in this quarter?
So I think business is coming back to normal, although I must say that January was not normal at all. But slowly it is coming back. People are, you know, going back to regular consultations and all, and are visiting the pharmacies and everything else. And that's one of the reasons also why you see a small dip in the overall online customers also. People are now, you know, happy coming outside and basically going to stores.
Okay, sir. Sir, and just one last question. Our online business, the share is like kind of like been little up and down because of COVID and all of that. But will our same store sales go down or get affected because of this? How do you see that happening?
So we count it all as one. For us, as far as we are concerned, whether it is online or offline, it goes into the store count only, into the overall sales. Sales may go up or down in a store because of several reasons, but it is not only about online, I would say.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take that as the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
So So actually, thanks Neeraj, thanks gentlemen for, you know, taking the time to be on our first call. You know, you can always get in touch with our, you know, investor relations team for any further questions and all. Otherwise, thank you and have a good day.
Thank you, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of MedPlus Health Services Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.
Thank you all.